For WKU Public Radio and NPR One, I'm Lamont Jack Pearly with The African American Folklorist. Today, I'm speaking with Kentucky native Michael Goff about his journey in music. Welcome to the African American Folklorist, and today I have a legendary guest out of the Kentucky area. I say specifically Bowling Green because the people who told me about this gentleman are from Bowling Green, and they sang his praise of the Bowling Green music blues scene specifically, but we're going to get his story right now. Mr. Goff, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Lamont. Thanks for asking me to do this.
No, thank you for being part of it. So let's start with your musical journey.
Well, my journey, like most, began with gospel music. My mother was a singer in the church. She was the lead vocalist at our country church on the Tennessee-Kentucky line. I was actually baptized in the Red River. It was an old country church. We only met two Sundays a month, first and third Sunday, because it was in the backwoods. But that's where it began. That's where my love for music began. I was 6, 8. And when we would go to church, I had a great aunt that we would visit and have Sunday dinner with, because her house was on her way to our church. And she had a neighbor, Miss Odella Cole was her name, that had a piano in her living room. And after dinner, Miss Odella would let me, I could cross the yard and go to her house. She also taught piano, and she would let me bang on a piano, but not bangs. She specifically said, you know, just don't bang on it. I remember that. But she would taught me chopsticks, and from there kind of took off. My mother could play a little bit of piano. She taught me and my sisters 4 basic gospel chords, and I took those chords and started making up my own songs with them. And this was around age of 10, I think, and, you know, just always loved music.
At what point did that gospel foundation become secular music?
When I discovered my older sister's 45 RPMs, which was everything on the Atlantic, Motown, Stax labels, all those artists from those days, from the 60s. And that's, I think, right along during that period. I mean, and that was pretty much it. I was influenced by all her 45s, you know, Aretha Franklin, Joe Tex, Eddie Floyd, all those cats from the 60s doing the R&B.
So let me ask you, at what point did you realize the gospel chords, or some like to call the black keys, are the same things that are going on in the Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles?
I think it was right around the time that I learned to play Old Happy Day on the piano, you know, and started feeling it right along in there. And the way she taught us the chords, there was a 1 chord, and even to this day, I can't tell you what chords they were, but she taught us a 1, a 2, this is what she called them, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And instead of playing them in that order, I started, you know, playing the 1 and then playing the 4 chord that she taught us, not the fifths, but just, you know, my mother's language, and started making up my own lyrics, you know, songs. First song I ever wrote, I guess this, my youngest sister still teases me about it, was called I'm So Sad.
So you had the blues early.
I did. Very first song I wrote, she still teases me to this day about that.
Well, yeah, we have to get the story behind that. What inspired that particular song?
Oh, man. I was probably around 9 years old. And there weren't a lot of lyrics to it. I just remember I was so sad. I think it was because I'd just gotten scolded and was being punished because I was rhyming sad with mad. I was mad about something. I don't remember the exact lyrics, but that was the first song I wrote. I was so sad, I was even mad.
So, well, I have to ask you this. At that time, did you know you were writing blues?
No, I didn't. My dad, who couldn't carry a note in a bucket, but he loved music. He loved music, and he was one of my biggest supporters. My whole family has been very supportive, but his thing was, one of my biggest fans if he was at a show we were doing and we were going through the motions, he would come up out of his seat, come to the stage and scold us, you know, and it would wake me up, you know, as to why we were there, you know. He was intense, and he used to sing old Robert Johnson song, which I didn't know was a Robert Johnson song at the time, Milk Calf Blues, when we were, I had a newspaper route, and we were putting papers together, 2 o'clock in the morning, rather be anywhere on a Sunday morning than doing that, and he would start singing Milk Calf Blues, which later I found out that was a Robert Johnson song.
So this was around you.
Yes. Music's always been around me.
Let's back up a bit. Now, you said that the church was in the backwoods. Please correct me if I'm wrong. What state and town were we in when this is all going on?
Well, we lived in Russellville, Kentucky, but we went to church at a church right on, I mean, it was 100 yards to a quarter mile on the Kentucky-Tennessee line. And literally, in the country, I mean, in the backwoods country.
Because the reason why I ask is because, again, one of the things we'll be working on another project we spoke about when we met, when people mention the blues or the Delta, they usually do not incorporate Kentucky.
Right.
It's always Mississippi. And then every so often right. you may hear Louisiana, Chicago, Texas.
Yeah. Right.
But we're taught this is in Kentucky. So that means the blues has been here since inception of what people consider the blues.
I'm not a historian as far as that goes. For me, now, I know people will debate and argue this, but Mississippi is the birthplace of the blues as far as I know and as far as everything I've seen and read and the vibe that I've got when I was in Mississippi. You know, I think that's where the birthplace of the blues was. Now, but what was going on in Mississippi was also going on all over the South. So I just think the roots are deeper there.
Got it.
But I mean, you know, what was going on there was going on in Kentucky. Kentucky, they said it's a border state, neutral state, but it was a slave state. It was a Confederate state when, you know, comes right down to it. So a lot of the same things were going on all over the South. But to me, and the way I always feel, is Mississippi is it.
I hear you. So now as a young guy in the backwoods of Kentucky,
yeah,
right off of Tennessee, your father is singing Robert Johnson songs and your mother is singing black spirituals, and you find yourself writing the first blues song that you at 9 years old. Yeah. So
well, I mean, you know, from there, I was part of my first band when I was in the seventh grade. I was in a band with four other eighth graders, and our set list was My Girl, Wichita Lineman, Hey Jude, but we only had like six songs that we rehearsed every Saturday. Never got out of the rehearsal room, but that was the first band I was in.
Now, those were pop songs of the day.
Of the day, which that was 68.
So, you know, let's take a sidestep for a minute, because specific to the blues, a lot of enthusiasts celebrate what's not necessary, what they don't consider or what's not considered pop songs of the day. But a lot of these songs were pop songs sang by musicians who wanted to, for the lack of a better term, be pop artists, right? Professional musicians. What is your take on that misnomer that, you know, these were guys and women that just wanted to sit on a porch and play music, but they were actually working to make pop songs and they were actually part of the pop culture of the time?
I really never thought about it. My influences, I was pretty much sheltered up until I was a teenager. And there wasn't a whole lot of that I was exposed to as when I was younger. I knew of one band, local band, which spanned a couple of counties. The only band that I know of in those two counties back then. And I did have the good fortune of playing with Mr. Robert Phillips, who was a sax player from that era. Later in the 90s, I recruited him to be a part of my band. But there wasn't a lot of influence around here that I was exposed to. There were other bands here, you know, in Bowling Green. But at that time, I wasn't getting out. Musically, I listened to WLAC Nashville, which was the soul station, played all the soul hits. And my teenage years, I stumbled on WLS Chicago, which was rock. And those were the two stations that I flip between in my developing, you know, as I was developing a style, a taste that I liked. I liked the old rhythm and blues artists, and I liked rock.
At this time, were you thinking genre or just thinking making the best music you can make?
That time I was thinking music, you know, just making music. My mother later bought a piano from our church. The church got a new piano, so we bought the old piano and she put it in our home. So I started banging on it, trying to pick out songs, you know, Sam Cooke, whatever I could pick out and play. And had a little toy drum kit that she brought for my younger brother, which he never took to music. And I would have friends that would come over and attempt to jam with me. One got pretty good. He tried hard too. we would just bang out and jam, you know, whatever was sounding good to us at the time. And that's what we would do. But as far as trying to specifically play a genre, that wasn't it. When I got turned toward blues heavily, that was in around 88, 89. I played music up until 85 from the time I was 19. So that would have been 73 up to 85 in different bands. Got burnt out on it and went on the road as a truck driver. Mm. So I did not play music. When I come back to play, I got in a band with a top 40 band playing popular music because I wanted it to work. And those were the bands that were working. So we were playing whatever was current. I wanted to play whatever was current to get my chops back. And kind of got burnt out on that around 3 years later. And I was always a side guy during that time, and I wanted to form my own band to be my own, you know, to call the shots.
Right.
I had seen how the business worked locally and just wanted to work more. So I wanted to put my ideas to the test as to working more, and formed my first band in 88, 89. We called it the Michael Golf Group. I called it the Michael Golf Group. I was playing with some people I had played with before, and every week we'd go into rehearsal, and one of my old bandmates would come in with a list of band names, you know, because that it used to be the old Democratic thing, you know. This is a band, everybody's got equal say and blah, blah. And he'd come in with a list of names. And every week I would say the band's name is the Michael Golf Group and would shoot that down. But the other guitar player, his name was Joe Roberts. He's passed now. But Joe was deep into Muddy Waters. Mm. And it was Joe who steered me back to that feel, to that musical feel. Because I'd been playing pop 40, top 40. I thought I knew what people wanted to hear and do. And so once I started playing with these guys, it was more about what we wanted to do and feel and hear and less about pleasing the crowd.
Right.
Dance music. It was more about making good music and what moved us. And what I found was, musically, if it's moving you and you're being true to what you're doing, then that generates out into it just fills the room.
Right.
You know, that's when I began to know and find myself musically as to what felt good and what I enjoyed doing. That was around, you know, beginning of the 90s and late 80s.
I guess this is a double question. Would you consider that going back to the roots? And is this the beginning of professionally writing your own songs and not doing covers?
It was definitely getting back to the roots and getting back to what just felt good. You know, we're all influenced. Everybody's music is influenced by other music.
Right.
And somebody else has done it. They may not have done it the way you are doing it, but it's been done. And for me and us at that time, we would cover songs, and I still do to this day, cover songs that have, you know, other people wrote, but we do it our way without. And what I try not to do is lose their original thought.
Right.
You know, I don't want to just take their music and bastardize it to the point that it's not what it was, you know.
I understand.
But as far as that band, we never wrote together. We did all covers of other people's music. The next band that I was a part of and formed after that one. Same thing. That was the one with Mr. Phillips that I mentioned earlier. And really, it's always been about me and the people that I play with finding that groove amongst the whole band, putting together a group of people that at some point we're all that one needle in that one groove.
Right.
And that's all I've chased.
We've been speaking with Kentucky rhythm and groove musician Michael Goff. Be sure to listen to part two as we continue our conversation with Michael. For WKU Public Radio and NPR One, I'm Lamont Jack Pearlie, and this is the African American Folklorist.